Studio 360.
In the 1970s, Carlton Douglas Ridenhour was a teenager in Queens, New York, and went to his first hip-hop show. The music hadn't started, and he didn't know quite what to make of the equipment he saw on stage. And as he told an interviewer in 2001,
I was totally confused. I was like, why do they need two turntables? In case the one over there breaks down? This person is very prepared.
He figured it out, had his aha moment, and in short order became a rap superstar himself. Ridenhour is much better known by his stage name, Chuck D. And Chuck D is, of course, the leader of the group Public Enemy. In 1988, Public Enemy released It Takes a Nation of Millions to Hold Us Back. That album was aggressively political and generally considered among the most important of the modern age. Our story of that Public Enemy album begins with a longtime fan of the band.
I absolutely remember the first time I heard Public Enemy.
All you suckers, liars, and cheap amplifiers, you cross up wires, are always on fires, you grown up fries, now here's a pair of pliers, give a job like your mama hurts, he fixes his own drive.
My name is Tracy McGregor. I am a former editor and vice president of The Source magazine. I was one of those that, you know, I still have my cassette copy of Yo Bum Rush the Show.
We was bum rushing in on the industry, so to speak.
I am Hank Shockley, creator of Public Enemy and creator of The Bomb Squad.
That record was, to me, was the prelude of what was to come, which was It Takes a Nation of Millions to Hold Us Back.
That first album dropped, and Public Enemy wasn't getting the props that they deserved, you know, from the media. They weren't getting radio play. Folks were criminalizing Chuck D based on the imagery and, you know, the things that he was saying, even though it wasn't criminal, you know. I think they underestimated. I don't think they recognized that this was an educated black man that was really able to contextualize what was going on. And so when they came back, he came back harder and more focused and more politicized.
Yo, Chuck, these dirty drippers are still front on us. Show them that we can do this, because we always do this. Yeah, boy.
Bass, how low can you go? Death row. What a brother, no. Once again, back is the incredible rhyme animal, the uncannibal thief. Public Enemy number one. 5 volts at freeze, and I got numb.
Right now, all around us, and so compelling you never miss the fact there's no melody, is a music that is all beat, strong beat, and talk. It's rap music.
First of all, they never really considered rap music music. And then they said, well, it's a kid's music. I remember when George Harrison once called rap music computerized rot. If it was a Lennon or McCartney, I would have felt dissed, but.
Here we go again. Bring the noise.
We had to do something fast. We had to do it now, and we had to do it cheap. So we decided to just make records from the records that I already have.
Our sole intent was to destroy music. Sonically, we set out to do that, to redefine what people thought of as music.
And since we didn't have a bass, a guitar, and things of that nature, we had to figure out how to use samples in a most creative way. I have 10,000 records, so it's a very tedious and incredibly arduous task to just go through and listen to every little hit, little squeal, vocal snippet.
That freedom is a road seldom traveled by the multitude.
Every little possible thing that we can possibly use in order to create this record. Some of the sampling is you want people to know that it's a sample, and then the other parts of the process is that you don't want them to know. There's many ways of dirtying up a sample. The first thing that we did was what is known today as bit crushing. and we would use the Akai S900. And that machine had the ability to not only play at 12 bits, but you can also reduce those 12 bits down to 8, to 4, to 2, for example.
You get a graininess that happens with the sample,
and it becomes less distinct, but it takes on a new characteristic. There was many different techniques that was used. We would take a very small snippet of something and loop it bit. We would take filtering. We would truncate sounds so that it become unrecognizable if you played it in such a short burst. These are techniques that we had to develop. We found ways of using the technology, meaning the drum machines, to create the sounds that we wanted to do.
Yes, the rhythm's a rebel. Without a pause, I'm lowering my level. The hard rhyme, where you never been, I'm in. You want styling? You know it's time again. D, the enemy, telling you to hear it. They praise the music, it's time to play the lyrics.
The rules of sampling in the time when we was creating the PE records, there were none. This was new territory that nobody kind of like had any kind of understanding of what the legal ramifications was. So we kind of like went underneath the radar. That's the reason why we decided to use so many of them, is so that we want to get the feeling and the understanding of, wow, you can use all of your records and not just one or two.
What y'all think y'all doing bringing us the corporate establishment saying we stealing beats? Y'all can't copyright no beats, man. Y'all junkies, they crazy, man.
Get hype.
Now there really is no set limit on how much you can charge for a sample. So if you look back on what we were doing, if everyone had that frame of mind, the cost of the records that we were doing would be so astronomical that it wouldn't be worth doing it in the first place.
They say that we stole this. I rebel with a raised fist. Can we get a witness?
The album is powerful. It is militant. It is unapologetically black.
We would promote gigs and put Malcolm X on the cover of flyers, and some cat would roll up to us and say, yo, who's this Malcolm the 10th? That's when we said it's important to see if we can use the music as it reaches people and just fill it with something that means something.
Freedom is a road seldom traveled by the multitude.
Unless you had parents who were in the movement, you didn't know who Assata Shakur was. You didn't know who Malcolm X was. You knew who Martin Luther King was, but you didn't know about these other folks. Public Enemy raised our awareness, you know, to where, okay, we start doing our research, we're connecting the dots and realizing, you know what, we have revolutionaries who weren't standing for this.
Study our music, you get our history by default.
The samples had to have a deeper meaning. We wanted to feel like it was a revolution.
Too black. Too strong.
So in order for that to be possible, the sounds that we had to choose had to resonate that vibration. It's not just about the textures or the timbre. It's also about the emotional content.
Have you forgotten that once we were brought here, we were robbed of our name, robbed of our language. We lost our religion, our culture, our God. And many of us, by the way we act, we even lost our minds.
You can trigger minds into not being so much asleep by using art, using song to make them think progressively against what's wrong or what's ignored.
In the never-ending search for the basis, we've come to a new hiding place. Yeah, that's right, Wall Street.
Check out the justice and how they run it. Selling, smelling, sniffing, riffing, and brothers trying to get swift in. Selling their own, rob a home, while some shrivel a bone, like comatose walking around. Please don't confuse this with the sound. I'm talking about
face.
He called out the drug dealers. He called out the users. And then he gave us the visual.
Chuck D, you're checking out Yo MTV Rap.
This is Lucy's house, and I'm gonna show you what happens to families when one of their members becomes a basshead.
Yo, listen, I see it on their faces.
First come, first serve basis.
Standing on line, checking the time. Homeboys playing the curve, the same ones they used to do early.
Yeah.
Now they're gone.
People like to turn a blind eye to the ugliness that happens out here, and he shined a light on it.
It's my obligation and duty to use the medium that reaches out to the people to bring a certain point or issue that's tucked to the back up for discussion. And that's what we did.
I got a letter from the government the other day. I opened and read it and said they were suckers. They wanted me for their army or whatever. Picture me giving a damn, I said never. Here is a land that never gave a damn about a brother like me and myself, because they never did. I wasn't with it, but just that very minute it occurred to me. The suckers had authority.
People weren't talking about this type of stuff on this level. You know, remember, we're post-civil rights generation. Chuck D reinvigorated the movement. See, we were languishing. Things still weren't right in our community, but we had no voice. We weren't organized. Chuck D single-handedly raised our consciousness and made us aware that the things that we were seeing and feeling were real.
The FBI was tapping my telephone. I never live alone. I never walk alone. My posse's always ready and they're waiting in my zone. Although I live the life that of a resident, but I've been knowing the scheme that of the president. Tapping my phone. Who's screws, abused, or stand accused of doing harm?
America, based on the counterintelligence program, has something to do with the murder of Dr. Martin Luther King.
We know the FBI's relationship with the black community. COINTELPRO. Chuck D knew that.
CIA, FBI, all intelligence is lies. When I say it, they get alarmed, cause I'm louder than a bomb.
Folks weren't ready for that. Folks think they're woke now, like Chuck D was woke AF back then, 30 years ago, and woke up an entire nation.
To those that disagree, it causes static for the original bloody Asiatic man. Cream of the earth, and what's here first is some devils prevent us from being known.
That story was produced by Jenny Cataldo and BMP Audio. All of those Chuck D clips are from a 2001 interview for the public television show Speaking Freely.